Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Our own Jason Rosenbaum is just back from Philadelphia. Illinois Public Radio's State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky covered both conventions, and she is also with us. Thank you both so much for being with us. You both look wide awake. I can't imagine why.
Well, after eating those brownies, I'm totally awake. So I thank your Mrs. Marsh for that.
Sugar infusion. Amanda, how are you holding up? It's been a long week.
A little bit sleepy, but you know what? It is an exciting time for voters, for candidates, and for, of course, political reporters. And I expect a really long, hard, awesome nap this weekend.
Well, good luck on that. Only 101 days to go. Look at it that way.
There we go.
Amanda, let me start with you. As a woman, as a female correspondent, this may have had slightly more meaning for you in terms of the history of what happened there last night. Give me your sense of that history as you were observing what was going on.
You know, put aside, of course, politics, but yes, it is a historic moment. And especially, I think, with the Illinois delegation, you had one of Hillary Clinton. She grew up, you know, in the suburbs of Chicago, and her childhood best friend was the one who actually did the roll call nominating for the state. And you could hear in her voice, Betsy Eberling, who still lives in the Chicago suburbs now, was a Clinton delegate, works for state government. You heard her choke up when she said, first talking about Hillary Clinton's parents and then saying, this one's for you, Hill. And I just have to say that with among my girlfriends, that was something that was, you know, passed around, and I had people saying, hey, can you send me that clip? More than I've ever had anybody ask for that, wanting to hear it, because just the notion of having your childhood best friend grow up to potentially be the president of the United States. And there was overwhelming reaction from members of the Illinois delegation saying that it was emotional for them, meaningful. And yet, I have to say that I did speak with, in particular, some Bernie Sanders delegates and younger women who said, yeah, we appreciate it, but sorry, we don't trust her. We don't like her. We're never going to. And that was telling, and also, therefore, spoke with some delegates, in particular, a lot of the elected officials and the older ones. There is a woman, Barbara Flynn Curry, who has been in the Illinois House for decades. She's basically Speaker Madigan's right-hand woman. And she said, in a way, it's frustrating that younger ladies don't appreciate how much has changed and how far they've come. But she's also glad that it has sort of eased in, and because that shows how that there is a groundswell of women in so many facets in government and business, etc., and that to her was, in a way, its own victory.
Indeed, indeed. I was touched when she was referred to by her friend as Hill. It just kind of brought it home that they were old buddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we saw a lot of Betsy Eberling. She was on the video biography that played just before Clinton gave mm-hmm. her acceptance speech. You saw Betsy there, and it wasn't just her. I mean, there was in the Illinois delegation also an attorney who had been a Yale classmate with Hillary Clinton, and they got together with some of their other friends. She said there's a group of them, and actually this woman, Betsy Eberling, gave a speech at these morning delegation breakfasts that are held every day and talked about some of her memories and said, you know, she's a girlfriend. She said they still talk about books and like to share books with each other. And I'll have to tweet out later, there was an author she had referenced that evidently she and Hillary both like, just kind of a fiction reader that really brought it home as Hillary Clinton was once just a normal, everyday gal.
Hillary Clinton, the person. Let me turn to Jason now. Jason, your sense of history. We talked about this before, but now that it's over, looking back and having been a part of it, what's your impression?
Well, even though I am not a woman, obviously, it's hard not to understand the gravity of the situation. Even though, as I just said, that clarifier, I have a lot of strong women in my family, like my mother who, you know, I think about every day, and who was a working woman and helped, you know, contribute to the household. And I think that a lot of men can kind of relate to the fact that in the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, they can look to a strong female figure in their lives and point to how much they've influenced them. So now we have a situation where that's kind of manifested itself in politics, where somebody is a presidential candidate and a presidential nominee for the first time for a major party. It is a striking thing to see, even if you aren't a woman.
You spent a lot of time, obviously, with the Missouri delegation, Jason. When it was all over and all was said and done with, do you think that the delegates left thinking about her any differently than they did coming in? Because that was what they were trying to do nationally last night.
I think it depended on who you talked to. I think that the people that were for Hillary to begin with were obviously very, very enthusiastic about what they saw last night. There were a couple who had been for Hillary back in 2008, like St. Louis Mayor Frances Slay, State Representative Margo McNeil, and they were for Hillary when a lot of their elected official colleagues were for Barack Obama. And it wasn't seen as, quote unquote, cool to be for Hillary Clinton. And, that was obviously a different campaign, and Hillary Clinton ran a race that was much different than what happened in 2016. But I think that they're very gratified by the result, that it took 8 years, but their candidate is finally close to the mountaintop. When you talk to Bernie Sanders delegates, and I've said this before on your show, there's really a continuum. And on the one hand, I think that there are Bernie Sanders delegates who are disappointed with the result but willing to back Clinton because, you know, the other alternatives just aren't viable, whether it be Republican Donald Trump or even Green Party candidate Jill Stein. I think there are others who are less, I don't want to say pragmatic, but they're still really upset about the result. They're upset about the email situation that happened before the convention. They're upset about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They're upset that they see that the Democratic primary seemed to be tilted or rigged in favor of Hillary Clinton. Now, you could make an argument that there were many reasons why she won unrelated to that. I'm not going to try to get into an argument there, but that's just basically what they told me.
Yeah, well, they've got 100 days to get over it.
Yes.
That's basically it. Amanda, let me turn to you. Did you find that the delegation, any significant number of members of the delegation might have left with a different impression of Hillary Clinton than they had coming in?
Certainly. And the one hand, you did see Bernie Sanders delegates who I think had their minds changed. Some were ready and accepting of the results as they were going in, and Illinois had a group of women that were friends that had become delegates together, Sanders supporters, and said Sanders supporters for Hillary. But then you definitely had, I spoke with a woman last night that said, you know, she had gone in undecided, frustrated that Sanders had lost, not a big fan of Hillary Clinton. And when the balloons dropped and the confetti fell and she was standing, for her, it was about waist deep. I'm pretty short. I'm about 5'2". And the balloons were higher than that on me. She said that she was emotional. She had a hard time getting her words out because she was so impressed, and it seemed like the DNC and the Clinton campaign had very much done their job. She's convinced and is going home now a Clinton supporter. There were, however, most definitely, I think even within the people who are still within Bernie or bust, divided. Those who are for sure Bernie or bust and say we're never going to vote for Hillary Clinton. And then others that I spoke with that said they're not ready to leave this convention with any sort of decision. They realize, they know this is a show, this is politics, and they consider themselves to be people who make their decisions based on the issues, and they want to get more from Hillary Clinton than just a speech. They were looking for her to say certain things, to talk about TPP, to talk about what she's going to do to the criminal justice system, in regards to the Black Lives Matter movement and such. And they say now it's time for her to prove it. So they're leaving the convention with an open mind, but nonetheless not ready to get on board yet.
What, Amanda, first you and then Jason, what is your most vivid impression? You attended both conventions. Your most vivid impression of the two?
Well, again, I just got to go back to that Betsy Eberling moment, just because it really was, I think, for so many people, touching, emotional, and such. But I'll point out how very different these two events are. You have the Republican National Convention within a smaller city of Cleveland. I think that whole city really rose to the occasion, was embracing, we're here for this convention, and was very into it. And yet the hall itself, you definitely had some Donald Trump fans that were hardcore, that were excited, that were in the moment. And same thing, when those balloons fell and that confetti, they were beaming from ear to ear. And yet so many legislators, elected officials, Republican establishment missing, there's just a different feel. And less star power was brought to the Republican National Convention as well versus the Democratic National Convention, where it seemed, you know, at every turn there was a celebrity. I know Jason and I were in kind of the floor level, and when you're not a delegate and you don't have a pass to be right there at all points in time, we were in kind of the back area where typically people that, you know, bring you the food and do the linen washing and stuff, that's where we were. But you walk on by and there's, you know, Katy Perry, Morgan Fairchild, cast members of West Wing walking around the arena, both watching and actually on stage. So just very different atmospheres between the two events. Even if you didn't listen to a word that the candidate said, you would be able to tell you were someplace very different.
Jason, did you have a most vivid impression?
Well, I had two. One was meeting Lester Holt, who I watched as a child in Chicago, and getting to shake his hand and tell him how proud I am of his national success. I don't usually geek out in front of celebrities or journalists, but Lester Holt is an exception. So that's a small one. I think a bigger one was when the Missouri delegation cast its ballots. I was the only reporter from Missouri to witness it. You know, I mean, obviously there were reporters maybe on TV, but I was like feet away from when Senator Claire McCaskill did it. I don't think she's ever done that before. And you know, it was kind of a parallel moment. You know, even though the delegates were basically split in half, here you have the first woman who was elected to the U.S. Senate in her own right and reelected under tough circumstances, basically helping the first woman become a presidential nominee in a major party. And afterwards, when I talked with her, you know, I saw her being interviewed by another reporter, and she was mentioning her mother, Betty Ann McCaskill, who in herself was a trailblazer. She was the first city councilwoman in Columbia history. And I could tell that, you know, I know that Betty Ann McCaskill was very important to the McCaskill family for more than just political reasons. And I think she was genuinely touched by the fact that when she cast those ballots for both Sanders and Clinton, it made her think of her mother and how her mother imparted her on about how important politics was. And you know, I think Senator McCaskill has told me that before, but after that particular moment, I think I'll remember that for a long time.
McCaskill obviously played a big role in this convention. Interestingly, in 2008, she was a supporter of Barack Obama.
Yes.
I think was on the outs with Hillary Clinton at that particular time for a while anyway.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. And she talked a little bit about that on Monday. But I think she also said that this wasn't as hard of a choice this time. She also made it explicit. She also reached out to the Bernie Sanders people too, not only in the breakfast, but that she had a private meeting with them. I think that some people came away from that more satisfied than others. But, you know, the other thing that I think was helpful, at least for me as a reporter, is that since Senator McCaskill was there, and also since Roy Temple was there, and he's had some very high-name clients, we got some really good speakers from Missouri, whether it was the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, whether it was Al Franken, or whether it was Tim Kaine on Thursday, who I know McCaskill is very close with. We got some good speakers, and that made for some interesting stories.
Did you have
Can I jump off on that
Sure.
real quick? So actually, the Illinois and Missouri delegations were in the same hotel, and it was a marked difference with the speakers who attended these delegation meetings, and just kind of some insight into how this works. So, you know, you have the television program that people are watching that goes on during prime time with all the really big speakers, but there's so much else that goes on during the convention, be it in the morning where states get together, they have breakfast, they listen to speakers, they kind of do their thing. That was very different for Illinois versus Missouri. Illinois basically is seen, even though at the Republican National Convention we had Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, and the delegate saying, we think that Trump has a chance, is pretty much, it seems, been written off by both campaigns as going to go blue, and therefore not attracting really that same sort of star power because they don't need to send it Illinois' way. Did, however, get a lot of national labor leaders, and this, of course, is ongoing as Governor Bruce Rauner's turnaround agenda calls for really diminishing the role of unions. He's let go temporarily, it seems, of his calls for moving to local right-to-work zones, but he also still wants prevailing wage, other cutbacks. There's the state's largest public employees union still doesn't have a contract, and you had labor leaders from all of these organizations, from AFSCME, from the Illinois, or from the National Federation of Teachers and such, come to Illinois and really raise a ruckus. A lot of hate being thrown at Governor Bruce Rauner, more so than Donald Trump.
Well, that is interesting indeed. I want to pick up on a couple of those points and will when we come back. We have to take a break. I'm talking with Amanda Winicky, who is still in Philadelphia, where she covered the Democratic convention. Our own Jason Rosenbaum was with me in studio. He is just back from Philadelphia, where he had the same assignment. We'll come back and continue our conversation, bring you into it. A number of folks want to get into it, and we'll bring them in when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Amanda Winicky and Jason Rosenbaum. Jason, picking up on something Amanda was talking about just before the break, one thing that most people don't realize that, among other things, these conventions really give an opportunity for these politicians to do some good old-fashioned networking as well, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. Especially politicians that maybe aren't up on the level of a congressman or U.S. senator, maybe state legislative or activists. The delegation has a pretty healthy mix of elected and non-elected officials, and some of the non-elected officials have been active in the party for a long time. And it's a good opportunity in a pretty informal setting to get to know some people that may be in another part of the state or another part of the country, and kind of figure out ways to, you know, be the most effective way they can as a policymaker and as a politician. So I think that there definitely is a networking aspect of that for sure.
Oh, very much. It's because it's not just delegates and, you know, politicians. It's also lobbyists attend these events. It is an informal setting where they are with each other in this same hotel. There are parties, sponsored parties. Again, this goes for both the Democrats and the Republicans, and a lot of emphasis on fun. There's a reason that in the morning, these early breakfast meetings, which I'm not sure if Missouri is like Illinois, where in order to get the daily credential, you have to attend the breakfast.
Yeah, same
part
thing.
Of how they get people to go. It's you got to have your broccoli and your carrots before you get your dessert. And so every morning there would be jokes about how tired everybody was because they'd spent the whole night prior, hanging out together. And so it is very much an opportunity for that. And on the other side, it's the there's kind of just the fun aspect, but it's also very much business and jockeying for position. In Illinois, there was a lot of talk about who Democrats may run for governor in 2 years from now, and this is an opportunity for anybody who wants to throw their hat in that ring to maybe get an opportunity to speak, not on that national stage, but just before the morning delegation where you have political reporters and, you know, the who's who of the party, as well as the people who are dedicated enough to go around, get petitions signed, and be delegates, and therefore may be handy campaigners for them down the road.
Well, for instance, in your delegation, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth was a delegate, and she is running for the U.S. Senate. I imagine she made good use of her time amongst her political friends.
You know, oddly enough, I mean, perhaps so, but she has the nomination already. The Democratic Party is behind her, and so she didn't need to do all that much. She had a speech that was given at the DNC, on the national stage, and then she gave some remarks as well before the delegation breakfast, and, you know, gave kind of a standard campaign-style speech, but she was only at the convention for a day and a half, two days. Attended the Illinois morning breakfast the one day that she spoke at it. It's, however, more, again, kind of, as Jason noted, the people who are, I suppose, aspiring. This is their opportunity to make connections, or it's an opportunity for a lobbyist to get to know a newly elected official or somebody who's thinking about running for office, and then they have a sort of establishment and relationship early on. What you saw a lot, like I said, it's more the jockeying versus the people who already have the position. So when it comes to governor, we had Chris Kennedy gave a speech that was widely seen as, before just the Illinois delegation, again, just making clear there, that was widely seen as his sort of introduction, trying to float it. And after his name has been said before, somebody who might possibly be an individual looking to run for governor, showing that he may be serious about it this time around.
Did you see anyone in particular doing that sort of thing, Jason?
I'm trying to think here. Well, there were some local officials who I think made some memorable speeches. For example, Emanuel Cleaver gave what I would consider a very moving and very eloquent discussion, not only about politics, but about his family and how his family life intersects with politics. Obviously, he spoke at the National Convention for 5 minutes. He spoke in front of the Missouri delegation for almost 40, and the audio is actually in one of the stories. I highly recommend people listen to that. I'm not sure, though, he has any aspirations to run for anything besides Congress. There also was a Kansas City Mayor Sly James, who I don't think has aspirations to do anything either, although Roy Temple suggested that he may want to take a look after making the speech. His speech was really not necessarily about him, but about Democrats being more aggressive to fight for gun control. And after the speech, he was pretty blunt by saying that not only do they have to advocate it, they have to start organizing politically, and they need to start funding candidates who are in favor of gun control, are funding against candidates who are seen as anti-gun control. And it's interesting to me because oftentimes in Missouri Democratic politics, you do have people who are generally from the suburban and urban parts of the state advocate that type of position. And then when you either have people from outstate Illinois or outstate Missouri are people who are running statewide, they always downplay that because they don't want to be seen as hostile to guns, which is a big part of rural Missouri. And I've said this before, but Attorney General Chris Koster, the presumptive Democratic nominee who was not at the convention, has an A rating from the NRA. And it's not out of the question he could be endorsed during the general election. So there is some disagreement within the Democratic Party about that. But, you know, there's disagreements about all sorts of issues in both parties. Sure. That one was just more notable.
I have a couple of callers we'd like to bring into the conversation with what time remains. We'll bring in Peter calling from Clayton. Peter, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Don and guest. I really enjoy the show. I was watching a lot of these two conventions, which to me are the March Madness of politics these last 2 weeks. I was really expecting a lot more disunity at the GOP over the DNC, and I watched a lot of this on the live streams. And outside, I saw maybe 10 times more protesters at the DNC, as well a lot more people walking out of the DNC, such as the Oregon, Washington, and California delegations. And can you explain to me the expectations of what people expected as far as unity before the conventions and what it was afterwards? Because even last night, I heard a lot of this during the clip.
Okay, Jason, do you want to start that?
Oh, I was outside when people started walking out. And I don't want to downplay that there were walkouts, because there were, and you know, there were decent amounts of people walking out, but I wouldn't say it was on a mass scale. I think that even some Bernie Sanders supporters, especially the Missouri delegation, stayed and watched. But I think that does show that there's an element of that contingent that is not ready to support Hillary Clinton. And these are just delegates. They're kind of representative of, you know, voters. But I have to imagine that sentiment is not just among delegates in some instance. Now, the question is going to be, what percentage of that the Democratic electorate will take that all the way to the polling place? And if it's a small percentage, especially compared to the amount of Republicans who are unsure about whether they're going to vote for Donald Trump, then it may not be as big of a deal in the end as it could be. But it really depends. Like, I would never want to say, like, even though Trump has ruffled a lot of feathers in the GOP, that they're never going to unite behind him, because it's very possible that could occur, even if there are some high-profile defectors on that front.
What do you think, Amanda?
You know, I do feel like the protesters were a lot more vocal, or at least I encountered them a lot more at the Democratic National Convention this week than at the RNC in Cleveland. Part of that might just be, you know, set up, or what doorways I entered through, the location of my hotel in Cleveland. There are so many people milling about all over the place. In Cleveland, Illinois' delegation was out by the airport versus downtown, whereas now with Illinois Democrats, they're in the heart of the city, and so my hotel room view basically is City Hall, and that was ground zero for many of the pro-Bernie, anti-Clinton protests. That may be in part because there is more that sort of culture of activism on the left than on the right. I think also, at least when it comes to Illinois, many of our, you know, prominent politicians stayed home. They didn't go. So maybe not as much of a Trump protest there, because the people who within the Republican Party, they're not going to protest. They're just going to kind of quietly say that they aren't going to be there. I have to mention, I spoke with a Democratic congressman, granted, who said that he was overseas with some Republican congressmen who didn't name who or which states they were from, but who had said that they on purpose booked the trip for the RNC because they wanted to stay as clear of the convention as possible and have a really good excuse for it. So those are just, I guess, a couple of the observations there. I will say also that there were, at least within the Illinois delegation, some of the anti-Clinton, pro-Sanders, you know, Bernie or bust folks that did not walk out. They said they wanted to see it too. Believe at least one, I didn't actually see it. She said she was planning to turn her back so she could hear what Clinton had to say, but show that she was not on board. But she said, and he kind of talked to several, that thought the booing was really just impolite, unnecessary, and not the appropriate way that it was for protesting outside versus in the actual arena. So just a couple of observations to that end.
We just have 2 minutes left, and very quickly I want to get this from each of you. I'll start with you, Amanda. Is this the right way to select candidates, political conventions like this, or do we need a different kind of system? After having gone through it, what do you think?
Well, you know, there was so much talk leading into this about a fractured convention and, you know, was it going to be actually like back in the day or in TV shows where there was suspense? And we didn't see that actually come to fruition at all. You know, I don't know if I can say either way whether this is best or not, but it certainly there are those who favor and the historical nature of this process. And I did nonetheless speak with some folks who said, you know, this is outdated. Everything else is done by sheer popular vote. What are we doing here? And this is basically a made-for-TV, when your caller referenced March Madness, I've heard of it also as the Super Bowl for anybody that's really into politics. And maybe it is all just that. It is a game made for TV versus an area where actual work and politicking and policy vetting goes on.
And 45 seconds, Jason. TV used to cover it all night long, an hour a night now on the commercial networks.
I know that conventions nowadays get criticized for being choreographed and unexciting, but that's because all the delegates or most of the delegates are chosen in primaries or caucuses, whereas in the olden days, many of the delegates and the presidential person was selected at the convention. So, I mean, there are pluses and minuses with both, but I think that I think the days of 1912 and 1908 are pretty much over. It's here to stay.
Or 1952.
Or 1952.
Right. Well, let's leave it there. I want to thank you, Jason Rosenbaum. Again, welcome home. Thanks for being with us on this program. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Have a safe trip back to your home, too, from Philadelphia. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.